You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Welcome to Law of Attraction Radio Network's Quantum Leap Book Club. Our host Parisha is traveling and teaching today, so I'd like to welcome all of our co-hosts. Tonight we're going to be covering Chapter 8 in Mind into Matter by Fred Allen Wolfe, and this is a new alchemy of science and spirit. So the co-hosts who are joining me tonight are Geraldine Dalby Ball, an environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia; Rosemary Heyer, an English teacher that working with children in Frankfurt, Germany; Joyce Mollenhauer, doctor of naturopathy, and she comes to us from Kingman, Arizona; Marianne Love, clinical psychologist from Melbourne, Australia; and I'm Trina Cooper. I'm a lifelong entrepreneur and activist in Denver, Colorado. So again, we're presently studying the book Mind into Matter by Dr. Fred Allen Wolfe. And last week, we did quite a review of the chapters in the book. Again, we're talking about a new alchemy of science and spirit. And when we talk about alchemy, we really speak about the fact that we're taking some things that are quite common and ordinary and turning them into the rare and the pure, kind of like finding the jewel inside the oyster is the way I like to look at it, from a small little grain of sand into a beautiful, beautiful pearl. So the chapters, we're going to chapter 8 tonight, which is Hate. And we just started that last week. So I'm going to ask one of my co-hosts if they'd like to do a little bit of a review up to this point, up to where we talked last week. Joyce, would you like to open tonight?
Sure. What we discussed last week gave us the building blocks to really follow what we're going to be talking about tonight. And a lot of what we're talking about tonight is, again, about being in the role of the observer, which is such a critical place when we understand it. Because I love when he gives the one example about the mouse or the rat in the experiment. And it was the rat that got changed by the observation. So we actually can change ourselves by playing the role of the observer and changing our focus. So we're going to be talking more about that tonight. And certainly we've reviewed the glyphs each week, and they all build on each other. So it's certainly worthwhile to look at those and follow that as we discuss tonight.
Thank you, Joyce. One of the things that comes to mind for me as we begin to talk about that and the glyphs, it's actually really amazing. We're talking about a flow of spirit coming into matter and having it begin to move, have resistance, and creation actually being born out of this. And as it reminds me of a teaching a long time ago that in classes that I was in that really talked about the expression of a thought or an idea and how it would come down through into consciousness. But the first thing it would do would be expand out to all these potentials. And then it would begin to refine itself and pull itself in as it dropped down into the field to become matter. And that particular, that's really the way that this is also describing it, that there's a flow of creation that comes in, and it's really spirit in movement. One of the other pieces that we keep referring back to that's incredibly important is the idea of the axioms of desire. And that was something that Parisha has, grandmothers really talked about a lot, that we have to get our hands around these concepts of the axioms of desire. And one of the things is that spirit is moved by desire. So when you think about thinking, or you think about sensing, or you think about feeling, or you think about intuiting, when something comes up for you and your mind is drawn there to thinking about those things, it actually begins to create the movement. And that's kind of a basis of becoming aware, coming self-aware in how you're beginning to manifest. So do I have another co-host with me that has something that they'd like to share? I see Marianne Love, that what would you like to say tonight?
Well, I thought it was interesting when I read the start of the chapter that it was actually talking about two different ways of manifesting and the theories around that. And with one of the ways being the fact that we could just simply observe and an event or an object will pop out of a cloud of electrons. So almost pop out of the nothingness through our observation. But then he's saying, well, some physicists like Einstein couldn't get their head around how the quantum model could actually have us just pop something out through observation. So then another idea that they created was the idea of the parallel universes, where everything that is possible is actually already existing. And so instead of popping out of a cloud of electrons of nothingness, we're simply interacting with something that's already present. So we have a beginning and end story, and then in the middle there, we can tune in to, I guess, all these parallel universes that and realities that are already there. So I think it's quite a distinction that I actually never really realized until I read this chapter that was present in the conversation about, I just assumed, you know, we observe it and it pops out of the field of electrons, but I didn't understand that there was actually another way to look at this, that these things are already existing. So the way I see that, if I was, say, wanting a gold bracelet, then in one theory, I observe the bracelet, I observe having the bracelet, and at some point, the bracelet will pop out of the field of electrons and I'll have that bracelet. I might find it on the street corner. Someone might give it to me. Like, however that happens, a gold bracelet will drop into my lap somehow. But in the other theory, there are two worlds, the world where the gold bracelet exists and the world where it doesn't, because they're both potentials of a gold bracelet. So I'm either, through my observation, interacting with having the experience of that bracelet or not having the experience of that bracelet. So they're just different theories that I thought would be really good to discuss and see, you know, does it make a difference to how we apply it? Like, you know, in terms of our meditation and focus and how we manifest, or doesn't it?
I definitely like that, introducing that in the very beginning, because I know for me, it talked about the pages, you know, imagine the pages being stacked upon each other with holes punched on both ends. And what came to me was, oh, okay, here's the beginning of birth. And the other hole is like the end with death. But how many possibilities of lifetimes could actually be there in the middle? And so I thought, that's kind of interesting. So as you bring up that idea about the bracelet, how many other potential ways could the bracelet show up? And it could pop in, for sure. It could manifest through work. It could manifest, it's like any of the beliefs. Maybe somebody wants to give it to you. Maybe you find it on the street corner. There's like so many potentials where the beginning is, I don't have the bracelet, but I'd really like one. And the end is having the bracelet. So it's kind of an interesting concept. I know Geraldine said she wanted to add something also.
Yeah, I guess a key point that I've been playing with in my own mind is related to this, in that the theme really is that manifesting. So how do we move it from possible? Now, possible could be we've created it. Possible could be it already exists in a parallel. But how do we change it from possible to probable, which means more likely, And then how do we change it from probable to actual? Because when we look at this and what we've just been hearing, anything that you think of is possible. And I know I've heard it said, hasn't necessarily, you know, really crystallized, but I've heard it said, if you have imagined it, then it does exist. So that goes to what Marianne was sharing, that if we think of it in a parallel world perspective, the gold bracelet already exists. So that would be, if you can think of it, it already exists. Now, the next thing is, how do you make it probable? And then the key thing that I've been reading is, just again, as was mentioned earlier, spirit is moved by desire. When I looked up the word desire, one of the common definitions, or the common words in each definition, was strong feeling. And that's where we get back to what a lot of scientists have told us when they're looking at the quantum, that it's having our thoughts and our heart making the same outcome. So this is where that thing of strong feeling came from. Strong feeling then is emotion or the heart. So then I'm looking at, how do I make it from possible? Number one, just to assume that if I've thought of it, it is possible. Number two, how do I make it more probable? That's particularly related to how much I can move the spirit by my desire. And this has been really key, because I find myself being a doing person. Even though I've read the book, I've understood that it says have a beginning and an end, let the story come out. I think the word was even, the story oozes out from between the beginning and end. So it's really training myself and observing recently more than ever to stop attempting to create every step in the story, but to, as it says here, animate the spirit with my desire, or animate it with a strong feeling. So put the end point there and have the strong feeling. And so when I looked at my day-to-day actions, I realized 90% of my focus was on the beginning point and the steps. I had an idea of an end, but really to confront myself and say, to apply this book, it's really about that end point is so clear. Now, to make it from possible to probable to actual, it's how much can I animate the spirit by my emotions? And as we've been taught, and the book shows, and same with our earlier book, Mishikaku, and many of the others. Mishikaku I like, because he said intelligence is an example of how many scenarios you can come up with. And I realized if my mind thinks of all the different scenarios, they're really flicking through a whole lot of different actualities. Now it's up to me to make them probable, make them actual. How much am I switching myself to now go, instead of 90% doing this, 90% being the end result? So that's really what this week has been observing. When something comes up, where's the outcome? And I found it's so much easier. And then that relates to this chapter, because he's saying you can just jump down the stairs in one jump, or five jumps, or six jumps. If we put a beginning and end, the amount of effort is up to us. So that's another thing I've had to confront myself. If I'm being busy, how about instead saying, okay, I'm an active person, how much of that activity is not necessary? How much activity can be replaced, the doingness with the beingness and seeing the outcome? So I've had some great results this week. I've also had great results in that I've found myself doing instead of being, and I'm actually catching it, and that's good.
That's really awesome. I know that you know, when we want something or we make a statement, the more energy that we put into it really does determine the outcome of what we have. And sometimes, because this, so much of this relates to story, we can find ourselves in that place of mind chatter where this could happen, that could happen, or you're seeing this scenario and someone else is going, where are you getting that from? That's your story. That's not my story. So it's really interesting to become aware of where your mind's going and keep that focus. And if you begin to get that chatter, to kind of pull back, take a time to step back, take a look, quiet your mind again, allow yourself to go into a focus and clear everything, because it's really the more definite you can become and the stronger you become in it, the more likely or probable or actual that the end result is going to occur. Now, I know that that Rosemarie had a comment to this as well. So we'll let her chime in here.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me? Good. This is Rosemarie from Frankfurt, Germany, and I would like to speak to what spoke to me a lot regarding the storylines. I mean, Geraldine touched on it also when she said that it takes a lot of intelligence to have a variety of scenarios in your life. And I think he basically says the same. First of all, he, as Marian said, and others said, this chapter is again about that we are living in very different, various parallel worlds and possibilities. And it's actually about summing up all the possibilities the chapter before had offered. And but it's still unstructured energy. And the question he's asking, and I really like that, is so why can't we become aware of these different other histories or stories? Why are we only aware of this one right now? Like, for example, I'm sitting in front of the computer and talking to you all. And yet he says we are still in all these other parallel worlds. So who makes that choice? And what I understand is that the storyline I'm in is based on my own belief system and my value system and how I choose, like Geraldine said, how I make the end and the past event aware. That makes me aware of where I am right now. So what came for me be clear again, what he has said from the beginning in the introduction even already, is that you cannot understand this book or understand how consciousness exists without working on yourself. So it doesn't work. And even someone said, I read somewhere, I think it was Pauli, one of the physicists who worked closely with Werner Heisenberg, he said one time that science has gone too far to describe things in a logical mind. But the reason why scientists moved to describe everything in a logical step by step is because they were afraid of doing the inner work. So, and that is, again, he's calling us to do some inner work by looking at why am I, or how many storylines I'm aware of. If I stay in my old belief systems, whatever they would be, and in my own viewpoints, he calls it viewpoints, I would maybe call it mindsets, I'm staying in a certain storyline. And the more I expand my mindset, the more I clear myself again, the more I work on myself, the more I can be aware of other storylines and can make a choice and can be actually present. And he says that we are always existing in other parallel worlds, but what really changes is our viewpoint. When I change my viewpoint, I move into another parallel world. I can actually make another choice, live in another reality, and not saying live in another reality, but be aware of another reality, which I'm always in. So I found that really important, that it's really very important to work on ourselves and again, and work on do our inner work, work with our imaginal realm, to be able to be aware of all these many stories and possibilities. That's it for right now.
Thank you, Rosemarie. I know we've spoken, not just in this book, but in other books too, about the fact that as we bring in new experiences and we bring in new knowledge, it changes our perception, and we're not the same person we were before we brought in that new experience or that new knowledge. So literally, as we begin to notice or we begin to take things in, we become aware of things, we do move into a different parallel. If for some reason we didn't have an experience, we would have stayed on a different track line for, you know, maybe forever, maybe an experience would show up later. But that growth, those little aha moments, I look back at my life and think, if I hadn't walked into the hairdresser one day and have a woman say to me, and here I'd been saying, I want some changes in my life. I want something different. And I was praying a lot at that point in time because things weren't going on so great. And I walk into the hairdresser and a woman whips around into the chair and looks at me and says, "It's you." And I said, "What do you mean it's me?" And she goes, "If you could see the energy that's just bouncing or shooting out of you and bouncing off everywhere, what's going on with you?" And I went, "You can see that?" And we went into this discussion of energy and the soul and religion and all sorts of stuff as we're sitting there in the hairdressers. And that particular moment created a completely different shift in my awareness and a completely different trajectory for my life. So I said, "I want something different," and different popped in a really interesting way. And my life has completely shifted since then. So you don't have to, you can just say, "I want my life to change," or "I want this to be better," and let the universe have it say. Joyce, you had something you wanted to comment on.
Right. I had fun with this chapter, and I kept looking back on some of the things that we've already talked about. With the cubes, one of the pieces I picked up this week in looking at that more was, once we have seen that we can see the box from more than one view, we can still just see one view at a time, but we have the memory of seeing the box in another view. So I hadn't really absorbed that. So I started applying that and thinking about that in my own life. And I love the fact that this chapter goes into the fact that we are in this eternal search for meaning. And some people do it consciously and some people don't. But the actual search is what we're doing, going into these multiple parallel worlds of possibilities. And we can call them the many worlds theory, or we can call them the observer effect. The end result is the same. We are searching for ourselves. And I love the, like what Tina was pointing about, the pile of papers that had a hole in it, connecting. All of those papers were identical, except they're in a different position in the row of papers. And they might have one small detail that was different. So another thing I picked up from this chapter this week was staying focused on what it is you're going for. Like, even if it is just saying you want a change in your life, staying focused on that, having the feeling that goes along with the focus, then the regardless of whether we're into one of the understandings of it or another, the bottom line is, yes, we can affect our lives by just grasping the fact once we make a decision, this is what we're focusing on, and stay focused on it. It doesn't matter whether it's the bracelet or whether it's a total change in the way you want to live and think. They all have exactly the same process involved with them.
Thank you for sharing that. You're absolutely right. And they do have an impact. And again, it's that awareness, becoming so aware in yourself that you notice these little opportunities or the changes or the doors that open in your life. You have a choice whether you want to walk through it, whether you want to accept the knowledge that came forward, whether you want to dismiss it or integrate it. And each one of those choices that we get to make takes us into the trajectory or the parallel world for the outcome as well. So I see that Geraldine has a comment as well.
It relates to what you were just saying then as well about, I just want to read a little line here that relates to those possibilities. And it says, while they're all present, you may not be consciously aware of it being present, but it can be sensed in the universe as an aura of field of possibilities. And I recall GMP saying that it's quite key to observe, not particularly to have to focus on any one thing, but be observant and be aware. And when I was reading this, what came up was, okay, it's not just be aware of what I'm physically seeing, because what it says here is you won't see this energy or feel it consciously, because its total always amounts to the same total you're experiencing. So whatever parallel I'm experiencing, that's what I pick up. But at the same time, it is there. And it says you're often not aware of what's unusual or abnormal in terms of this light energy, which is these other parallels, which are these other possibilities. But when we switch our viewpoint, then we're in that other possible. So I love the exercise that's suggested. Sense this light in your mind and you're no longer stuck in this universe. Now, this universe is beautiful. We might not call it stuck, but what I gather here is saying we're no longer needing to think as a physical body and I have to do physical thing 1, 2, 3 to get the outcome. We're talking about spirit animating matter. The other part it says is it's best done in silence and humility. And I feel through the book call, when we are able to discuss this, it allows us to feel it just pop up in, you know, pop up in moments. And I have seen that just recently, like a person's trying to get a flight out of here. They needed to move it forward. There was some stress. And we said, just picture yourself with your friend in Western Australia. And the smile changed, the feeling changed. I can do it. And then when it said you're going to get a response back in 48 hours if you can change your flight, all of a sudden there was a response within 5 minutes saying, of course, you can change your flight and it will cost more, but then the extra flight was less money and it all was seamless. And it's, again, that observing that there was this other possibility, and it was only when it started to be seen that it became the viewpoint. The viewpoint was they were in Western Australia and it all worked. Then that was there. So the way I read this is having those moments of silence and humility once you've created that endpoint. And that was that little part about the parallels always being there, and there is a light for us. There's a light in our current universe around us to increase our observance to be able to recognize it
and see and have others recognize it as well. It's what we emit. And Marianne, did you want to speak a little bit about aura?
Just wanted to add to what's been discussed. On page 120, he talks about with the parallel worlds, he talks about, the statement is, our knowledge or present awareness depends on its relationship with both the one actual past event and the one destined future event that punches through all the parallel realities that we exist. And I honed in on the word relationship. And I think in what everybody's said, when we're thinking and visioning a future event, our relationship with that future event is actually a key aspect of what determines the experience of creating that event and what parallel world we'll go into. So our relationship with it. So if, for example, I'm imagining a gold bracelet, now if my relationship with that vision is that, oh, well, I'm too poor, I could never have that, that's something that only other sorts of people have. If that's my relationship with that future vision, then I will create a storyline based on that relationship. And so therefore I might create the parallel experience that I don't have that bracelet, because that's the stronger relationship that I'm actually having to that visual or that desire. So I think it's really key that we look at our, you know, and as a psychologist, I always see in my clients and in myself is like these underlying belief systems that get in the way. You know, like I might say, well, I deserve a gold bracelet, and yet there's this little gremlin on my shoulder that says, no one in your family line, no one in your generation ever in your hole for hundreds of years have ever reached that high. So why would you be any different? Like, so I think, you know, if we're going to engage with any storyline, then we have to almost correct the storyline, like rewrite it, or drop all storylines and just wholeheartedly go into the reality. I have the gold bracelet without a story attached to it. You know, my relationship with this is because of this science. I know it's true. I know it's possible. And therefore, just through simple science, I can have a gold bracelet, you know, rather than every other story. So I think it's important we look at our relationships.
I find it really interesting. You know, you brought up the point about you could go into a different direction because of your belief system. And I always find it really fascinating that you may have a family with, you know, basically their culture or the atmosphere around where they're, you know, growing up is very similar for each of them. And some may stay the same track as the family, and other ones will completely break out of it by sometimes desires, sometimes by other experiences that they have. But it's always interesting to me. Did you have anything you wanted to add, you know, along those lines too?
I would like to speak to that for a moment. What came to me is a picture like what Marian said, and I said that before, is like, it feels a little bit like I'm in a room, in a dark room, so to speak, but it's not empty. It's full of possibilities. And then I have a flashlight, and that flashlight is my thoughts or my belief systems, my values, my future events. And I can only see that part where the flashlight points to. That's my storyline right now I'm aware of. But the moment I move the flashlight, I can see something different. And then if I move it again, I can see something different. And that moving of the flashlight is actually my mindset or my belief system or my relationship to my storyline and to my future event I would like to create. So that picture came just to me to explain that maybe more or add something to it.
You're muted there, Trina.
There we go. Clicked it three times and it finally came off. What I was saying was that I appreciated Rosemary sharing that because it really is a great visual as to when something comes into our awareness and the way it can direct us or the way we can take a look at it. And so I saw that Joyce wanted to talk a little bit about the aura and again what it is that we perceive and what it is that we take in and how we notice. So go ahead, Joyce.
Yes, the fact that you've already shared, Trina, about the lady and the hairdresser could pick up on your aura, more and more people are understanding that they do have an energy field and people do notice it. And some days they might pick up that you're very happy, even though you're in a serious face. And another day they might pick up that you're very sad and yet you're putting on this huge effort to smile. So what I loved was I had never known anything about the Japanese no drama. And I have a Japanese daughter-in-law, so I'm eager to find out, you know, what has she gone to some of these performances? But I'll just read you what I actually looked up, that this is a tremendous skill and talent to be able to dance in a Noah drama. And the musicians have to be equally skilled as the dancers. It's a classical dance that has been going on since the 4th century. And it's based on tales of a supernatural being coming into human form. And in that human form, narrating a story. So it's integrated, the whole process is integrated by wearing elaborate masks, elaborate costumes, and various props. And these people are very highly trained. Their emotions are conveyed by gestures and quite often with the music that goes along with the dancer. So their actual costume is the same all the way through the whole drama. But the audience knows when there's been a complete shift, even though the face has still got the same makeup on, it's the combination of the music and the aura of those dancers is what gets the message across. So yes, it would be amazing to attend a NOAA drama so that you could actually speak firsthand about it. But that made so much sense when we realized through all the studies that this our particular co-hosts have gone through, we do know that our aura affects people every day and that we can affect our own life by what we are feeling in that aura.
It's absolutely true. You know, that combination, it really speaks to all of the senses. It speaks to the fact that we observe from a great distance sometimes, or just this change of a music and hearing a different music can bring up something. It's amazing to think that we can consciously create our aura or the way we're projecting into something huge where people notice us before we ever come in a room, or we can pull ourselves down so tiny and small that we'll walk in a room and no one will notice. It's kind of a fun game, actually. But what you were sharing, Joyce, about how the face doesn't necessarily have to change, but the energies that are portrayed and the signals that the people are picking up will have a completely different impact or effect. And Geraldine wanted to share something along this line too. So I'll go to her there.
Yes, and it's in relation to how much can we affect things or affect them? Because I was looking at, okay, what are the things, if I'm going to make a decision to be consciously joyful, what brings me that? And it's really along the lines of how effective am I when I see an outcome? For example, something will pop up on Facebook, Amnesty International, there was things I was reading last night. And there's just things that it can either be so painful and it's like, how can we be doing that as humanity or environmental destruction? And it's like, okay, apply this. What could an endpoint look like when we're all living harmoniously? What does that look like? Can I get that feeling of excitement to hear that these people have been let out of detention or whatever it might be, that bit of forest has been kept? To apply this then, instead of just thinking, oh, well, I know it can work for a car or a house, or, you know, I'm totally blessed with where I live. I'm completely surrounded by nature and happy people and everyone's got abundance and all those things. However, there's still this little inkling that's not satisfied in me, and I know it's because the true happiness comes when you know you can be part of the next layer of creating harmony. And I'm sure everyone who tunes into this program or all the books we look at on Quantum Leap Book Club, it's because you're bigger than your own personal needs, and that happiness comes when you know you're affecting change. So we can use this. Our aura is not just that physical space either. It's not just the 2 inches or the 10 feet, however it is. It's we can affect things at a distance with exactly this, seeing the endpoint. What does it look like in that country, that place, whatever thing has popped up for you? What does it look like as an ideal outcome? Celebrate how that is. Of course, you can take action as well. Donate money, write letters, help with promoting so other people know about it, with the idea that not other people feel heavy about it, but that other people can then add to how great it is to celebrate refugees and no longer in detention centres offshore in Australia. How wonderful to value each of these people as they are and create a place. So I just wanted to share that because I had started to think, if my life was really ideal, what is it? And it's that ability to make a change on that next level. And this book gives us that in entirety. So our aura is more than just that physical space. It's also seeing the end point anywhere on the planet.
You know, when you were talking about that, what popped in my head too was that 100th monkey experiment, in that when a certain group of monkeys on one island or whatever learns a certain thing, it affects all the monkeys, that type of monkey on another island, or the test that they've done taking DNA samples out of the mouth and taking them someplace else, and what happens to the body impacts that DNA sample that's been moved. So there is a consciousness that's between it, you know, between us and others. And as we move our energies out, and as you were saying, Geraldine, as we take that vision and we project our energies out and we can see that outcome, it's being backed by science that it has an impact. It really does have an impact. So we can change the world simply by sitting and really focusing and raising our vibrational energy, how happy we are and what it is that we can imagine in the world, the good in the world. And as we bring that, as we share that and we ask other people to join us doing the exact same thing, we can have a huge impact in the world. Anyone else have a comment on that? I see Marianne does.
Yeah, I do. Just looking on page 124 for anyone following along in the book, he talks about the fact that it actually takes two to create an auric field, which I thought was quite interesting. So if we're just emanating out without anything else present, we actually don't yet have an auric field. It requires an observer or an audience in order to actually create the field. So that's key really for all of us in terms of realizing that we're relational and have an impact on everything that we do. So to be conscious of what auric field are we emanating, what are we emanating, and who's picking it up and perceiving it, and what the intention, I guess, what's the intention of the emanation, because every moment we're emanating, so whether it's conscious or unconscious. So if we're consciously emanating, which is amazing to be around people who are 24/7 consciously emanating, because you really feel the impact of what they have on the environment. I mean, sometimes just being with grandmother and walking into a room, you feel like the room has totally transformed itself after not very many minutes of sitting there in that presence, because I know how she will intentionally use her own emanation or auric field to shift the space that we're all in. So thinking we're all doing that always and all the time, and that it's always being perceived and it's always having impact. And so again, an invitation to a consciousness, a conscious, intentional living.
Absolutely. And, you know, the point is really well made that there needs to be that second half, the perceiver, the one who picks up on it, and those that are tuned in, just like radio receivers, if you're kind of dialed into it, you're going to pick it up. I can see that Rosemarie has something she'd like to share on that, and so does Geraldine. So let's go to Rosemarie first and hear what she has to say.
Yes, I just feel that what Marian shared, I was thinking about that also in regards to being a speaker, a public speaker, or running seminars or workshops, you know, that if there's a different response from the audience, or maybe a lack of response, how can I, actually adjust my auric field to be more present or to make a difference? So it's not so much about doing again or saying certain words, but it's about being, and it's about the imaginal realm that I go into that field of energy and change my aura. And the other thing I thought was interesting when he spoke about the auras of dictators or very important people with a lot of pictures around, like in North Korea, the dictators there, the pictures everywhere. And I thought it's also the other way around, maybe that the Chinese did not allow the Tibetan people to have a picture of the Dalai Lama at their home. because that also does make a difference. It also exposes an auric field or an energy. And that's maybe one of the reasons they knew that energetically, that it wouldn't, that they don't allow these pictures. And then I also thought about that he spoke that if someone is thinking of you, that even your bubble can reach back into the past. And so with my auric field, I'm not only influencing the present moment, but I can actually go into the future. Like he shares, if I would go somewhere in a bar, for example, the people could sense me even earlier before I arrive. And it's actually up to me to create that. As you said before, Trina, you know, am I going to be bold and happy and exuberant, or am I going to, you know, kind of slowly walk in there and shy in a shy way? So just to be present of that energy and how much impact it's had, just like Marian said, I find that really interesting. And I just think I will integrate that more in my life.
Thank you for sharing that, because, you know, it's true. And we get bombarded all the time with advertisements and billboards and announcements. And we really do need to be aware of the impact that these things are having on us as we see a picture of someone over and over and over again, or the lack thereof. All of this, the perception, what we take in and what we perceive is, as this chapter says, meaning and manifestation, the great gathering. It's like, what meaning do we put to it? And as we gather all of this, how do we manifest coming out of it? Geraldine had a comment on this as well.
That thing of the two-way to have an aura. And it shows me the responsibility every one of us have to find and see the best in a person. Because if it takes two to see the aura, if I'm going to look at a person and think, oh, gee, look at whatever, you know, they've got plastic bags, you know, I'm creating small auras. But if I look at a person and think, what a lovely smile they have, or if I could, when I look at people and specifically look for the good in somebody, what science is saying is that I am then able to be part of the two-way cause of someone else's aura as well, as an observer effect. And I notice this a lot with teenage boys. I've got a teenage boy. I see quite a lot of them. There's quite a lot of societal things that see, at the moment I'm observing and they're sharing with me, they're seeing them. They're picking out the faults, basically, especially if you get a whole mob of them together. But if you look at them and really acknowledge something magnificent about them, and they all are so magnificent, not only do they grow, you see them stand differently and they pick up. And that's even without saying anything, just looking with appreciation of these young men who are moving through their stages of life. So that was one point to pick up. And it's our responsibility, respond with ability to see that. And also it reminds me of a story that GMP or Grandmother Parisha has shared with us. When I had young children, she shared that in the Cherokee, when a young child, for example, might have been going to pick up a stone to throw it, one of the people in the community would say, oh, that's so good of you. We did need some stones collected. That's terrific. Thank you so much or we appreciate you starting to collect the stones. Just when you've got a whole bucket full, bring them over here. So there was that catching and repurposing, and that really stood out for me as a mum of young children. And I realize now, again, another layer to it is allowing the two-way recognition of aura. And on that point, really quickly, I totally know what Rosemary was saying, but I still need to correct it because I have so many friends in China, and having been to China, it's not the Chinese people. There's a section of the Chinese government that have a rule about not having the photo. That's all. That was part of my growing the aura of Chinese people, because everyone I know is a magnificent human.
Absolutely.
And that's it from me.
Okay. That was really great, because, you know, you can change simply with a smile, simply with recognition, just so that people know that you have tapped in. They recognize it. You don't have to say or really do hard anything, but just that look or smile or whatever can raise the energy of a situation so easily. I see that Joyce had something she wanted to add with this as well.
Yes, I'm so glad Marianne brought this up about the needing to make an org feel, because with the increase in public speaking I'm doing now, and also in an increase in writing, it makes me truly understand how ridiculous statements I have heard in the past from speakers of, they had a audience that was totally boring. Well, if they had understood that this is a two-way process and they weren't feeding into the auric field in that room anything that had any value or meaning to the people who were their audience, then of course it seemed like they weren't getting any work. So I like the fact that they show this example that a performer gets no applause, so then they look at their performance. That's what we can do on a day-to-day basis. If people are responding to us in a way that we don't understand, and heaven forbid, but we do this, or I do it sometimes, judge them because they didn't respond. It has to come back to understanding that it takes the two factors in the auric field. So again, thank you, Marianne, because I think it's an extremely important point.
I think too, if anyone's ever been to a comedy, Joyce, where the comedian and jokes just haven't landed on the audience, and how degraded they've felt and they've just lost the whole performance. Like, I think they'll totally understand what you've been sharing.
And I wonder what their aura looked like that day. You know.
Oh, I've watched it. It's terrible. The poor, you just felt sorry for them, almost painful. Exactly.
But they blamed it again on the audience. Their heart might not have been in it that day. The axioms of desire was something that they didn't understand. So I just love this. I think this is an answer to a whole lot of judgmental comments from people.
I love the point you brought that up, because there have been so many times, and you can see this in movies, you know, we get sucked into the movies and they project a field as well. And when you're watching one where someone's taking a stand or making a dramatic point or something, and everyone standing there is just like motionless, and you get caught up in this, and then all of a sudden one person starts to clap or one person starts to laugh, and it's almost giving permission, but everyone else, it starts to spread. And then you can literally feel in your own body it shifting. You can feel that there was this kind of hold your breath moment, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and you get caught up in the joy, or you get caught up in the excitement of something that's going on. So yeah, that projection of the energy and the gathering in of that information really does set us on a path. And anyone else, we're coming up close to the end of our time here today. We've got a little bit more, so I can ask each one of you if you have a comment, or one of the questions that Grandmother Parrish brought up last week was, if you put yourself this time next year, in December next year, what is it that you are going to create as your endpoint for next year? So that where you are right now, to where you are then, all the things start coming together. So if anyone today has any comments on that, I welcome that as well. So anyone want to go first with a comment? Anyone want to start? We just have a couple minutes. You got to sum it up quick.
I think I said mine in a way, and it's that ability to know that every one of us makes a difference. And by that time, it's that knowingness that if I saw something, a case on Amnesty International, and whether it's myself or get a group of people together to see an outcome as well as taking action, that we go, yes, that one's done, next, that's done, that's done. So there's a whole critical mass of people knowing this information, applying the end results, and getting a more harmonious outcome for the whole planet in the many spheres of wherever someone's interested, environment, social, children, any area, we can do it. And so we do it together, and we do it by celebrating the outcomes. So that's what I like to look at that part of the world, is how many, that time, how many wonderful things we can go, yes, that is now different, that is now harmonious, that is now respectful, that is now caring.
You sound like you might be talking about the global transformational festival that we're generating, visioning for 2021. So I know on my vision board is 750 speakers in Australasia, in each country having a certain number of speakers, and a very powerful event that transforms the planet.
Absolutely. Do you want to expand on that a little bit more?
Well, any one of us can, but we're actually bringing together a whole lot of thought movers, motivational speakers, people interested in the environment, but people that speak from the heart and are able to share really powerful messages across the planet. And that's going to be occurring in every country across the globe next year. So pretty much every day of the week, there'll be some amazing speakers and information that people can grab. And I know where I'm personally in Australia, so I'm focusing on the Australasia area, but I know some of you guys, I am with Geraldine, and some of you guys are focusing on North America and as well.
Yeah. And Europe. We've got Europe here too. It's fabulous. Joyce, did you have something you wanted to add before we go tonight?
I would say that if I want to put a word to what I would like to see different in myself a year from now, would be just an incredibly increase in awareness, so that with that awareness, my sensitivity would be there and I would take the steps that were mine to take that could make the difference.
Wonderful. How about you, Rosemary?
Yeah, I can add to Marianne that I see myself also more and more connecting to humanity and the planet, and being connected with like-minded people from all kinds of cultures, and helping to organize that unity in mind, and really making a big dent into the understanding of where people are, because most people think everybody is like watching TV and going to work. No, there are millions there who are really going on their path and are willing to share, and I see myself more and more connecting with that. And the other thing I want to be at the end of the year is I really want to master manifestation. So that takes work and focus, and that's what I want to be able to do, to really be a master of manifestation.
Fabulous. And I myself, again, this is Trina, I the vision board piece that Marianne brought up, it's that is a key in this as well. This could be the end point for you. So, you know, as to what you want to create by next December. And for me, it really is a greater outreach. It's a bigger voice, not being as small as what I've tended to be in the past. And a greater outreach and touching many, many more people. And it's been funny since I've thought about it. I've gotten phone calls from people that I haven't heard from for a while with invitations. So it's kind of interesting that when you put that intention out there, whatever it may be, it does have an impact. And that's what this chapter has been about, is really about how everything begins to coalesce. And as meaning, as you bring in meaning, it does lead toward a different type of manifestation. So create something in your life every day and bring in more resources and create a different you. What are you going to be like by this time next year? It could be absolutely fabulous. And your aura and the number of people that you touch can have a huge impact. So again, it's we're coming up to that time to conclude our studies this week. And we thank you for sharing your time and energy with us, because you truly matter and you count and you always make a difference. We look forward to you being with us again next week as we make that leap to greater consciousness. So have a really powerful week and allow your light to shine, and always, all good things to you. Thanks so much for gathering with us this week. Look forward to seeing you next week on Quantum Leap Book Club, Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.